breakfast in London, then it's lunch in New York. But I must tell you this, tonight it's dinner in Paris. Your girls are so mundane in your 9-to-5 jobs, catching your suburban train. Work behind a desk in front of a word processor, all the answering emails are flirting with a bus.
Good morning and welcome to episode 157 of Taking the Charge Podcast with you from Lille, France. I am David Hine of Hine News. Thanks for coming around. Obviously, I am at the Eurobasket 2015 in France and having a grand old time. It's been pretty nice, and have to say that plenty of fantastic stuff here to observe, to take part in. It's been a just seeing this arena here in Lille is pretty impressive, the way they've turned this football stadium into a basketball facility. Can imagine that it's been a pretty difficult endeavor, but seems like they've done a pretty good job of it. Obviously, there's some differences that you would not have if you were in a basketball facility or an arena that mainly hosts basketball games or events of the like. But it seems to me that they've been able to, FIBA Europe have been able to pull it off. It's quite chilly in the arena, because we're basically outside, and even though there's a roof over our heads, but it is still pretty chilly, and it's already, you know, mid-late September, so it's getting a little bit chilly, but still pretty nice, and have to tip my hat to the organizers. In general, you know, so we're in the middle of the quarterfinals. Half of the semifinals are set, with Spain, I think, fair enough to say, upsetting Greece yesterday. Pau Gasol and, you know, Nikola Mirotic played a huge role. I think also you have to, you know, there was the very important stage there for Felipe Reyes. You know, Sergio had a strong performance as well, but obviously Gasol was pretty darn good. That guy is he might be able to do something in basketball one day. You know, Greece, you know, you have to start wondering whether or not they're kind of like France. You know, France had Spain as their boogeyman, had been beaten by the Spanish in a number of big games, until they took them down in the semifinals of the Eurobasket 2 years ago, and then obviously last year beating Spain, the hosts Spain, at the World Cup. You know, Spanish team that was basically, you know, everybody had them playing against the Americans in the final, and yet it was France who took them down in the quarters. Greece, you know, they've lost to Spain now in a couple of big games in a row. You know, they had the 2006 final of the World Cup. Then you also had the semifinals of the 2007 and 2009 Eurobasket, and now you have the 2015 Eurobasket quarterfinals. So, you know, it's kind of the same. It's sort of along the same lines, where you have this monster, you know, Gasol and everybody, you know, still beating, still being good enough to knock off the Greeks. And so a very, very intriguing semifinal, hosts France, favorites France, which is basically the same situation we had last year, hosts, and favorites, Spain. And, this time it's, the roles are reversed, and, so it's going to be a great battle. It's going to be very, very fun semifinal, and cannot wait for that. Obviously, the other semifinals not yet set. There's the two quarterfinals tonight. Serbia taking on Czech, which, if all goes to plan, I don't think many people have the Czechs beating the Serbs, though the Czechs are a very good team. And then you have Italy against Lithuania. And, you know, Lithuania, one of the best defenses in the tournament, against an Italian team that has mainly been focused on offense, but did show a little bit of defense against the Israelis, over stretches at least. And so that could be, so it's going to be a good one as well. And then those two winners face off. The winner of the semifinal reaches not only final but has an automatic bid to the Olympics. So the plot thickens, if you will. I think you know, with the Olympics, you know, right around the corner, qualifying tournaments are kind of being battered about who might host them. FIBA had a press conference yesterday announcing the new competition system. I'll get into that in just a bit. You know, they also said that they would like to have, ideally, they'd like to have the three qualifying tournaments for the 16 Olympics on three different continents. But obviously, that depends on who's bidding. You know, everybody's talking Germany, talking Russia, but we still, you know, the quarterfinal losers, we don't know which of the quarterfinal losers do not make the qualifying tournament, and so that would be another option. So it's still very much up in the air. I want to move to the first topic. Actually, I guess maybe just let you guys know who I will be talking to. Have players coming up after this first topic. Couple of interviews from losing teams that kind of want to put up there because there's some good stuff in there. I'm going to start with Dario Saric from Croatia, and then move on to Zoran Dragic. And then from Slovenia, and then finish off with two Turks. I had a chance to talk to Furkan Korkmaz after their game, their loss to the French, and then followed that up with Shadi Osman. So those will be coming up after the first interview. The first interview I had is about the new competition system. Starting in 2017 with the windows, I guess why don't we first just run the interview, because it kind of gives us a little bit of a rundown on what things how things work and whatnot. So the interview is with Patrick Kohler, who is the FIBA Communications Director. So we'll catch you on the other side of that interview. Right. So on the show this week, Patrick Kohler, Director of Communications with FIBA. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
We are here at the EuroBasket. We are at the quarterfinal stage, about to start. I know you haven't seen this yet, but maybe give us a quick recollection of what you've seen so far this summer. You were in
Australia, I believe, for the Oceania?
No, I had not the pleasure to be in Australia.
No, you weren't. Okay.
No, but this is actually the only continent that I haven't visited.
It's a long trip down.
Exactly.
But you were in Mexico for the FIBA America.
Absolutely fantastic. I mean,
so we had
basketball is on the rise. When I tell you what I saw in Tunis for the AfroBasket. I just remember a fantastic arena with 12,000 people. This is a new record in Tunisia for not only for basketball but for any indoor sport. So amazing atmosphere, great fans. Then going to Mexico for the FIBA Americas and having another incredible record, not only for basketball in Mexico but also for any FIBA Americas championship, where we actually had more than 20,000 people for the semifinal versus Argentina. And now we come here in Lille, 26,000 for the round of 16, still the best games to come, France still in. I mean, I can only say that we're having great times for national team basketball.
Only wish we had a little more space here to fit more fans, huh?
Well, you know, it is. I mean, I think it's really cool. I haven't got the chance to visit the arena yet. Everybody's just so positive about it, about the experience. So I'm looking forward to tonight's game with France. Also, having friends in the tournament with all those fans will be an amazing experience, I'm sure.
Earlier today was the presentation of the details, let's call it that, of the new competition system, FIBA competition system, and the calendar starting in 2017. Let's not go into the super details right now, but let me just give a general overview of the biggest change in the system, and we can go into details a little bit after that.
Well, maybe before starting to really go into the changes, we should maybe explain why we decided
Let's
to change.
Do that.
We actually want our sport to grow. This is what we want to do, and we decided 4 years ago to really start from scratch and look at all the opportunities we have to try to develop and promote the game around the world. And one of the major thing that we all agree that we could work on was the competition system that we had about national team basketball, because the fact that the current system has really showed limits in terms of the times that we are playing and the visibility and exposure for national team basketball. We just play in what we call here the summer, obviously, depending where you are in the world. You don't call it maybe the summer, but the months where most of the people are on holidays, on the beaches, more than in basketball venues. And we just do this for 2-3 months, and then national team basketball disappear for the whole season and we come back. Then there's also no lead up to events. Now you play the Eurobasket here, for instance. If I take Europe as an example, some teams will qualify to Rio, so in 2 weeks we're not going to talk about those teams anymore before next June, when they're going to be the Olympic qualifying tournament and then the Olympics. So what's going to happen in between? Nothing. So there's clearly no clear lead up to those tournaments. There's also one big issue that we had to address, which is the wear and tear of the players. We cannot have players playing the whole season with the clubs and then straight up come to national team and then start the season again. So I think we were all in agreement to say that we need to change the system in order to find a more player-friendly system that will allow them to really also get some rest time, but also still let them opportunities to invest some time for national team basketball. So we completely review and started with the assumption, which is a fair statement of saying that national team basketball is a locomotive of the sport, and this is actually happening for any sport. If you think about any country, any sport, if the national team is doing good, the sport is doing good in the country. So this was the main start of this thinking process to change.
And the main idea is to take it away from the summer and just an individual summer, and have 4 windows during the year to play. 9-day windows, 2 games, qualifiers. Obviously, people will know this from football. Was that the main other sport that you looked at as far as implementing something that's similar? Were there other sports that you kind of looked at? I mean,
well,
obviously, football you can say is a success because you have all these qualifying games that were playing at sold out stadiums and stuff, but. You know, where did some of this, let's call it inspiration or ideas, you know?
I think of course you have to look at football because just of what it is. I mean, nobody's going to question that. But we have to see that we are the only Olympic sport, team sport, that doesn't have any windows and that just play in the summer. So this is not only football. We have volleyball, we have handball, we have a lot of other sports that are playing on a regular basis. And one of the biggest issue also that we wanted to change and to use national team basketball in order to stimulate the growth of our sport is the fact that to do this, you need to bring your national team home. There are some players that haven't got the opportunity to play official games, meaningful games, not friendlies, but meaningful games in the last 15 years. Speaking about Greece is a great example where you had, but you can speak also about other tournaments, other continents, where Argentina, exactly. They play one time at home when they organize one time the FIBA Americas. But if you don't organize it, you don't get to see really your team. So this regular games and bring the national team home in front of their own fans. This was really the basis of this new concept. Now, if you speak about key changes, it's going to start in 2017, and we're going to have, as of November, home and away games that's going to lead up to the FIBA Basketball World Cup that was going to be played in 2019 in China. Six windows. In each window you play two games, one home, one away games, and we're going to have then the best team qualifying for the World Cup. This is going to not only happen in Europe, it's going to be really worldwide. We're talking now about Division A, so the one playing directly to qualify, 80 teams. I mean, if you think about, just imagine being in November 2019, you're going to have on a Thursday night, you're going to have Thursday, the whole day, because you start in the morning and you're going to already have
in
Asia.
Oceania,
exactly.
Asia
and Oceania will play together. This
right.
is a major
right.
change.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to start with to watch those games and you're going to have the whole day 20, more or less 20 games. And the next day, another 20 games, which is a total of 40 games if you think about Division A, which is 80 teams. So it's 40 games in 2 days, then one rest day, and then again the home and away, the second leg. So just imagine the frenzy, the media frenzy, and the opportunity for basketball all around the globe. So just this, goosebumps, you know, for basketball fans, and to try to bring our sport really to the people. And this is obviously something that's gonna, we believe, is gonna tremendously change. And then we decided also that we needed to give more prominence to the World Cup, and we decided two major changes. One was to move it from 1 year, from 18 normally to 19, to get out of the shadow of the FIFA World Cup, because we came 1 or 2 months after, and obviously all the media, fans, broadcasters, partners had invested everything, a lot of resources, money, and then we come when everybody's tired and exactly.
Well, the budgets are gone too.
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah. So we decided, okay, let's go and move it to 1 year, where we really want to be the event, the sporting event of that year. And also, to give it more prominence, we decided that we're going to move from 24 to 32 teams. Those are the main changes for the first 2 years, and then you're going to start again the qualifiers for the next Continental Cups, which is going to be held in 2021. And this also is a big change, because we're not going to have every 2 year now Eurobasket like we had until now, for instance, again talking about Europe, but we're going to have it every 4 year. The idea is really here also to, you know, we need to make sure that the players are taken care of, and that we don't abuse of their time, of their energy, and then we make sure that we respect them and we give them also some time to rest. So in this new system, we always have in each 4 year cycle a summer which is free, where you don't have a big tournament, and this is 2018.
So that's 18, 22,
Absolutely.
26.
Absolutely, exactly.
Okay. Speaking of players, that's obviously the biggest concern for a lot of people. A lot of people think NBA players aren't going to be able to come. NCAA players aren't going to come. The stance initially from EuroLeague and some of the leagues was kind of like, oh, you know, we're being, you know, pushed. You know, this thing's being pushed upon us. You know, we don't like it. And you know, at least the EuroLeague stance has kind of softened. Obviously, with the February and with the November and February window, NBA, NCAA are kind of out of the question. But as far as the player argument that is out there, what's your main counterpoint on that?
Well, I think we have to consider and discuss about NBA and the other leagues on a separate level. With all due respect, the NBA is alone at the level where it is. If it's about the exposure, if it's about the media, if it's about the finance, I mean, it's another level. So that's why we also, this was one of the things that we recognize, we having more and more problems to get the best players, the NBA players, to our tournaments. There are so many missing now. Now, this summer, we have 45 players of the NBA that could play that are not here. It's normal because they cannot commit every year and every summer. So this is also a fact that we say, okay, let's take this into consideration. We want the best players, the NBA and all the others, at our major tournaments. So it's not the case anymore. And if you see the trend, it's worse and worse because, of course, people, we are always demanding more games, etc., etc., and clubs are more reluctant to let their player go every summer. So we need to make sure that we find a system that allows the best players to participate to our tournament. And with this new system, we actually give a hand by saying, okay, every 4 years you have one summer free, but make sure you commit. Also, during the NBA season, we're going to let the NBA players concentrate on the NBA season. It's fair enough, and this is going to be a tremendous opportunity to develop new players, new stars. We believe there is great basketball outside the NBA, and this summer, just look at the results. You have plenty of examples where why are not all the NBA teams or the teams with most NBA players trusting all the best spots? It's not the case. Look at Venezuela beating Canada. Venezuela zero this summer, zero NBA players in Mexico. Canada 8. Mm-hmm. Look at Czech Republic beating Croatia. Mm-hmm. Look at Serbia, no NBA players last year making it to the final of the World Cup. Many, many examples. I mean, now it doesn't mean NBA, of course they have a lot of best players, but it doesn't mean that you cannot have a competitive and a great team without NBA players. So this system will really allow teams also to develop some more players in order to maximize the participation of those NBA players for the major tournaments, which are for Europe, Eurobasket, and then FIBA Basketball World Cup and the Olympics.
Hosting, organizing games in Europe, I think on a general basis is probably okay. I think most people could probably do that. And so there's not necessarily needed support there, but you know, you can imagine that maybe in some of the countries in Africa that it might be an issue. Maybe some of the developing countries in Asia, it might be an issue for these home and away games and organizing. Is there going to be a concerted effort to support these federations, in especially at the beginning of this whole process of building up this organizational, you know, This whole organization that needs
I mean, it's really a fair question, and we are well aware of the situation, and this is actually also one of the objectives of this new system. We need to build facilities in order for people to play more, and we know that in some countries, in some continents, you named Africa, for example, which is a good example. Some countries are not allowed, are not able to play today just because of lack of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we don't have the financials now at FIBA to really say, look, we can distribute some money here, build a gym. But this is exactly the point. We want to stimulate those national federations to go talk to the governments, talk to the national
companies,
Olympic committees, talk to partners, commercial partners, in order to say, look, we need to be there in order to play. We need to have those qualifying games and to play them in order to play at the World Cup, in order to qualify for the Olympic Games, in order to have a chance, in order to develop basketball. So this system is also a way of saying, or developing our own national federation. This is going to tremendously help them to organize and, as I say, develop the infrastructure in the country, but also the organizational structure of the national federation, because we have a great product. We are 100% sure about that, but now it's about putting it in place and selling it. And this is exactly what is going to take now, and this is also going to help our federation to develop. Now, it's not going to happen from one day to the other, we know, and we have an implementation plan. We have already contacted all the federation so that we understand exactly the structure of the federation. We asked them also to give us some information about the venue at the disposal. We are doing that, and it's not a it's in 2 years. It's fast, but we have a clear implementation plan in order to be ready. But of course, we cannot do the whole work, and the National Federation has also to start to work straight up in order to make things happen.
What happens if something doesn't? If some federation, you know, last minute, or you know, a couple, you know, weeks before, say, you know, I mean, you know how things happen in Africa, or you know, in some parts of Asia, just, you know, they say they can't do it, and it won't happen.
Look, we'll see what we can do. Hopefully, I think at a certain moment we have to see also, okay, has everything been done in order to achieve it? Yes and no. If it's the case, then we can see how we can help. I think we need to consider each case by case. But also an important point is, we know that all the we have 215 federations. We know that they are not all of them today ready to play, and that's why also we created different divisions, and that's why we believe with 32 teams in Europe they have it. Then it's 16 in Americas, 16 in Africa's, and 16 in Asia with Oceania together, right. Combined. We believe this number of 80 we should be able to achieve. Now it's going to be a big question. Our aim is 140 countries playing this on a regular basis, because we know that we still have a lot that don't have nothing, or that's too small and stuff. But our aim is, in a short, middle term, to have really 140 national federations competing between Division A, 80 teams, and then the rest. But we can start with 100, we can start with 90, we can start with 120. This is no problem. We hope then the other will be stimulated, motivated, because they see the other, what's happening, and going to join the train.
I know it's still pretty far out, but I imagine that, you know, just, you know, you don't go into something this big without doing a lot of you know, wide ranging research. What kind of economic impact do you guys see for the federations in general? I mean, I can imagine it's bigger for, you know, maybe bigger countries that can host, that have more, that can, you know, bring in more fans for those games. But, you know, maybe in general, do you have like any sort of economic development ideas that you guys have available?
Each national federation is different, so each model will be different. Some has more government support, some less. Some have more commercial partners, some has less. But what is important is that actually we had before we started this, and before we really go deeper into the sporting aspect to define the formats, we had an important study that said, look, the cake is going to get bigger. It was a tough decision to decide to kill one Eurobasket now, if you think about Europe. And of course, this is going to be less money for FIBA. This is absolutely clear. Now, we believe that this is for the good, because all this money then is going to be redistributed to national federation, because each national federation now can go to a partner and say, look, I'm going to play now, as of November 2017, 6 home games to qualify for the World Cup. That means 6 times we're going to have TV exposure, 6 times we're going to have fans coming, we're going to have a media coverage. This has a value that today does not exist. The only thing I can sell now is a couple of preparation games, and hopefully if I qualify, I go to play in another country. Here, it's home games, playing home fans. So I think we have tremendous opportunity there for all the national federations, because all the commercial rights of the qualifiers are with the national federations. If you organize a game, every ticket that you sell, every sponsor that you have in the arena is for you.
For the last question, let's move a little more over to something that everybody knows is kind of my baby, is the youth tournaments. Next summer, we'll have the Under 17 Youth Festival, I guess is how we're calling it, where the 17 men and 17 women play together. Maybe what was kind of the biggest idea on putting them together? Is it something that the 17s in 2 years, or what's I guess it would be in 3 years, would probably happen again, or is it kind of a one-off thing? So just what about the 17 and that youth festival?
Well, I think it was a great idea that the Spanish Federation came up with. You know, it's not always to find organizer for youth tournaments, and there was a couple of times where we discussed this opportunity, but Spain came really with a concrete project on the table saying, look, we want to do something. And I think this is really appealing because it's not only about basketball, and you have also music, you have also some social projects around it, and this is really positive. And I think it's a first experience that we have to go through and see how it is. It's also, I think, the way that they position this, of course, the idea is not to go to big city that has so many events, but maybe to bring those events in maybe smaller cities where people has not the opportunity to see such kind of events, and not in city where they have anything that you can see, and from sports to art to culture to music to whatever. So I'm really excited about to see how this is going to be. It's going to be one of a kind, and then we'll see. Hopefully, if it's a success, I'm sure then we can then keep on going under that direction. But I'm sure it's going to create some synergies also, and I hope it's going to really help for. To motivate also a younger audience, to motivate also the players from both teams. You know, already this, you're gonna have some more. Exactly. So I think the idea is really interesting, and I'm looking forward to see it happen next year in Spain. And as we know, Spain, they are able to do a great tournament. I mean, they show it's what they're able to do with the World Cup, and we are sure that again they're going to be able to put up a tremendous tournament also for under 16 men and women.
And your league final fours, etc.
yeah.
Right now, there's still four cities in the bidding, if you will. When do you expect to be announced? When that is actually going to be named?
Well, I think this is the Spanish Federation is assessing those cities and sees. So I think this is really a process that they are undergoing at their level at the moment, and it's tough for us. You know, we don't care. We know Spain is great. We know they have the organizational capacities. I think it's really for them to assess and to find out who's the right region more than city, because you need more than just a city to do this, to find the right partner for this event.
And who has a good beach.
Okay, so a lot in there, a lot to digest and work through. I will put the link on there. I wrote a short piece. I posted a piece that I did about the qualifiers, and included in there are the graphics, the PDFs of the breakdowns of the qualifiers for the 2019 FIBA Basketball World Cup, as well as the 2021 FIBA Eurobasket Cup qualifiers. So kind of how teams can qualify for both competitions. Lots of arrows, and multiple rounds. I think the idea I think is not bad. I think to bring the teams, the national teams, home. And let their fans, I mean, being here and watching 26,000, 22,000 last night, fans watch their national teams. I was just chatting with someone from Serbia, and he, basically said, as an initial reaction, FIBA has turned international basketball to shit. And then the question I had to him was, do you like watching your national team? And he says, yeah, all 9 games and the preparation games. And then I said, well, this is actually a chance for you to see them live at home, which is not the case for almost all teams, because it's basically just the host team hosting the Eurobasket, AfroBasket, FIBA Asia, whatnot. And whereas this is a chance for all countries to see their national team play at home, and so I think it's not only is it a chance for the fans to see the players, it's a chance for the national federations to kind of improve their the organizational standpoint. You know, you're having to organize these games. You're also having sponsors. You know, you can, as an organizer, you can go out and get more sponsors for these games. You know, it's, countries can try to get the games on television, which can also then, if you have more exposure, media exposure, you can also have more television exposure, which gives you more possibilities to bring in revenue. So to bring in more, and the rights, the commercial rights to the qualifying games are all, you know, they belong to the national federation. So there is a money-making opportunity here for these federations. So there's a lot of benefits. They do the calendar also incorporates an entire summer off for players, which you know, if you ask like the big time players who are mainly the players who play in these big competitions, you know, they have to go year after year after year, and you know, they're always, you know, there's always a little bit of criticism. Oh, you know, he's not playing for his national team. Well, he played last summer for the national team and he had like 2 weeks off and had to go back to his NBA, EuroLeague, whatever team. And you know, these seasons are getting longer, and so there's built in an entire year off. 2018 will not have a competition in the summer. And then every 4 years, so 2022, 2026, those will be summers off. So there are some, there's also a benefit for the players. And yeah, so there are a lot of benefits. Obviously the biggest criticism is the NBA, whether or not they're going to be around and in these games. And you know, it's for all intents and purposes, these qualifiers will be NBA-less, especially in the November and February windows. I can imagine the June windows might be a little bit tight as well, considering the NBA teams reaching the finals, maybe even the semifinals, whatever, the conference finals. I can imagine those players might not be available. And June, I can also imagine a problem in Europe, with some of the federations. You know, Italy go very deep into the year with their, rounds of seven game, best of seven series, which is pretty crazy. But so there are some playoffs in June, in many leagues in Europe. So that might also be a problem, though. I believe actually that the window, checking that right now, the window is actually in July. It goes into July. Yes. So the window for 18, for example, is June 26th to July 3rd. So that actually probably would be doable for most countries as well. So, in general, okay, of course, you're going to miss the NBA guys, the NCAA guys. It's unclear exactly with the D-League how that's going to work out, but you're going to miss those guys for the November-February windows. But in general, I think you're going to have, you know, that also, and one of the things that they also say is that it does give a chance for other players to kind of step up, develop new stars. But in general, you know, obviously this has been a topic of plenty of discussion on this podcast for listeners who've been around for a while. We've batted around on this one quite a bit, Oz and myself back in the day, and you know, initially we were pretty strong against it, and you know, I've come around to at least say, hey, there's a lot of benefits there, and let's see if it works. Let's put it that way. Let's see if it works. And then we'll kind of go from there. You know, if it works, great. And if it ends up not working, you know, there's plenty of different ways to, there's time there It has to be given time, though. I mean, we can't say in 2019 all this thing is crap and, you know, nothing is working and everything else. You know, it does have to, you know, we have to give it some time. In 2017, it doesn't even start till then, so there's still 2 years until then. So there's plenty of time still, and I think people need to just give it some time and let it run its course first. You know, now we have a calendar, now we have a, you know, the structure, you know, now we know how people can get to the World Cup. We know now that if you don't make the World Cup, you're not going to the Olympics unless you're hosting the Olympics. In Japan's case, if Japan, for example, were not to make it to the World Cup, that they would still be in the Olympics as hosts if FIBA give the spot to the Japanese. So yeah, the calendar, you know, it's there, it's set. Also for the Eurobasket, the FIBA Eurobasket Cup is what they're calling it now, or they will be calling it starting in 2021. It's all broken down, and it's all broken down in there. Division A, Division B, and that's not just Europe. It's throughout. Also, again, I will put, like I said, put the link on the show notes, the website, and also on Facebook and Twitter. I will link again my story, my piece on HighNews.com, and which has at the bottom the PDFs of the four regions, and how the qualifiers will work. So it's all there to take a look. And, you know, like I said, if you take a look at it, you'll see there's lots of arrows going, crossing timelines, which, you know, just seems like, I don't know, maybe it's like Ghostbusters crossing lines. You don't know how good it is. So, but, you know, as long as you're able to follow lines, you can kind of get through it. But it's there, you know, we know how, more or less, how things are going to work. So, you know, we can envision it now. It's not just this, you know, this strange foreign concept. Oh, we're going to have a new calendar with windows, you know, the dates are set, for the 17, 18 and, 19 qualifiers to get to the World Cup in 19. So you'll know, you can pencil those dates in on your calendar, pen them in even, that those are the national team breaks. How that's going to actually look during the breaks, well, you know, we still have time to figure that out and see what it looks like. But in general, it was a pretty exciting day to kind of get the whole thing in, let's say, black and white, even though it's you know, fancy coloring in the PDF. Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, it was kind of neat to have it all there. And, you know, they were there, the FIBA and FIBA Europe were there to answer people's questions. Obviously, the biggest concern was the NBA. But they're saying, okay, it's a different beast, it's a different monster, and we're just going to have to accept that they're not going to be there. You know, whether or not that changes down the road, we'll just have to see. You know, that's kind of up to USA Basketball to figure that out with the NBA, and I'm sure that the European federations, the Asian federations, African federations would be totally open to having their stars, their NBA players available. So I think it's really a case of USA Basketball trying to, if they want to, trying to convince the NBA to break up their season. You know, this would also be a chance for them to cut some of the games. And, you know, everybody, you know, there's so much talk that the season in the NBA is so long and drawn out even before the playoffs start. So maybe this might be a way to kind of alleviate that issue. So there's a lot there, and a lot that we can talk about in the future. But at least we have the calendar known and how the whole thing works in theory, and we'll have to see it in practice in a couple years. So yeah, thanks again to Patrick Kohler for taking the time out to talk. That was pretty nice. And I have to wait and see. So I guess why don't we move on to the Eurobasket interviews that I have. Like I said, Dario Saric. We'll start with Dario Saric. After that, move on to Zoran Dragic, Furkan Korkmaz, and finish off with Shedi Osman. So we will catch you on the other side of those.
This was a tough test for about 25 minutes, and you guys then showed that you're a strong team. What does this victory show after the loss against against Greece?
I can say after the last game against Greece, and now play like this tough game. We didn't start very good. We start like so. And they was leading on a half time, and after that we changed one speed up, and we show how we play basketball because we got quality. We must just put the energy and quality we got. That's it.
How important was having Bogdanović back in there for you guys?
For sure, he is the best our player, and of course it's easier when the best man in the team, and it's easier because you feel the you feel some security behind your back because you have a great shooter, and because of that it's easier to play.
What's this like for you? This is the third time around with the senior team, your third summer. How's it feel for you now?
But for me it's always the same feeling when I was like 15, and now when I got 21, it's the same. I will give everything for my country. I will fight for each second of the game, and that's it.
You have, you've changed over the last year and a half, going from a 3 now up to a 4. How do you think you're taking to that transition?
I don't know. I don't know how to explain this. I think I can play 3 man, but in this Euro basketball, the coaches choose to play like position 4, and I must play position 4. But I think I can play position 3 because if I lose the 5 kilos, why not?
How do you feel in the 4?
I feel okay, but the 4 man is more work than a player who play with the ball, and everybody who know me know I know how to play with the ball. I'm not a guy who will work, but when you play for national team and when you play basketball, your job is to give everything on the court.
So you're looking more to play a 3 long term still?
Maybe 4 with the ball, I don't know how the coach says I must play like that.
Really quick, Mario is playing more, getting a little more minutes than last summer at the World Cup. He's on his way to Orlando. What do you think about him and his sort of development? You know, he also had up and down time with Barcelona.
I don't know how I can say. I know that guy, he's a great player, great person, extra worker, and I think for sure he will find his place on the top of the basketball. NBA, maybe NBA All-Star, but he got great potential and he's an amazing player.
One last question. What do you guys have to do to be successful at this tournament?
I don't know. It's hard for me. I think we must play every game one step more than we play now, and I think that's the key for the tournament like this.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks for the time.
Really quick, your thoughts on this game? You know, they had that 16-point run over the second and third half, and then also kind of answered your late run. Talk about your guys' resiliency to get this victory.
Yeah, it was a very tough game, especially we know that they can play basketball and they're very aggressive. And we make a run like 15 points, and then like the same story like last game, third quarter, we were struggling too much. We have, I don't know, blackout, and they come back, and then it's tough to stop them. So I'm happy that we push it back in fourth quarter and win this game.
What's it like for you to be back on this stage? Obviously 2 years ago it was at home, you have the home fans here. In general, what's it like for you to be back on the stage?
It's always nice to play for your country, especially Eurobasket, and of course especially when you have that kind of fans support you every game, and it's just fun to play.
Maybe talk about last year, maybe what you learned in the NBA. What kind of things did you really take out of that whole experience?
I take a lot of experience from NBA, especially it was something new for me, and I'm very happy that I was there, and I never say no to the NBA, so I'm going to come back, I hope, someday.
What's something that you really did take out of that whole thing?
From their perspective, like I see all these superstars, I was talking with them, what I need to do better, how I can, I don't know, attack the defender, like that kind of stuff. All about the basketball and other culture.
Coming back here now, you're at Kimki. What do you want to do there? I know we're here at Eurobasket, but just one quick question about Kimki. What's it going to be like for you to come back and play here in the European club scene?
It's going to be the same like I play for Malaga, so I already know the EuroLeague basketball and all this league, and it's going to be fun, especially with the Russia team Kimki. We have a young, talented team, and it's going to be, we have high standard in EuroLeague and in VTB League.
You can see on your game that you've worked on your offense a lot. Was that, you know, the main idea is that you come here now more of an offensive weapon, whereas before you were also really tough defensively?
I try to do both ways. It's very tough. But you know, I try to do both way. I try to play defense and of course offense, and I try to be all around player. That's my goal.
Last question: what do you guys have to do to be successful here?
We just need to play defense 40 minutes and be focused and don't have that kind of blackout in third quarter.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time.
So this is the end of a long summer for you. You guys were in the round of 16. This is a great team. Your thoughts about playing in this game at the Eurobasket against France?
First of all, we expect this game like hard, like tough, because they have really good players, so many NBA players, and they have very big experience, you know, for the Europe. And then for the Eurobasket, I want to say I am very happy for the part of the team, because it was a very big experience for me. I am very happy for that.
What's the biggest thing you learned at this stage, playing against older guys, even in practice going against these guys?
You know, they're older than me, and every time they try to speak with me, like, do this, don't do this. I learned sometimes you have to play like this, you have to play like this. I learned this.
How tired are you?
Not so much, but I'm tired. I need to rest.
What's it mean for you that you were able to play here? That coach said, okay, let's go with the future. Let's bring these kids in. They played great this summer. Not only you, the other guys as well, that you were able to play in this.
You know, we have golden generation. And like golden generation is, our target is Olympic medal, you know. Our target is Olympic medal. Of course, everybody expects young guys play in the senior team. But we will show how is our golden generation. We will show it.
You're going back to the club level. What are your expectations?
For sure, I had big experience from last year. And then this year, I want to improve myself in EuroLeague, in Turkish Basketball League. You know, maybe Turkish Basketball League is one of the best leagues in Europe. I want to play in there, and then I want to take some responsibility for Efes.
Here against a team like France, obviously they have so much experience, and you're probably disappointed, but with such a young team and a team in transition, what's your thought about how Turkey performed here?
I mean, we was in a really tough group, you know, in Germany, and I think that we play well. But here against France, in front of 27,000 people, you know, it's not easy to beat them. We give our best, you know, just to play against them, to beat them, but our performance wasn't enough for that. And, in first half we was good, but in second half we lost our concentration. They make some threes and we go down in defense, and that's why we lose the game.
What's the biggest thing you take out of this whole experience?
Like you said, I take a lot of experience here, you know, and the coach gave me a freedom. He believes in me, and I play a lot of pick and roll here. And I can say that the pick and roll was my, like, the best thing here.
How do you feel different compared to last year? Last year, I mean, you were kind of happy also that you were able to play in Spain. You had the great U20s. But how do you feel different this year from last year?
Oh, I mean, that was last year. You know, it looks 1 year past. And I grew up, you know, I learned how to play against these teams like France. You know, in EuroLeague also we play tough games with Coach Chip. Coach Chip gave me also freedom. And I think like we're a young team, and I think that we will be better in a couple years.
Furkan was here. He had a great summer with the 18s and 19s. Talk about him. Maybe talk about what he showed. Maybe to you. I mean, you know him obviously, but maybe what he showed to you and maybe the rest of basketball Turkey.
Oh, Furkan is like he's an amazing player. He will be a very good and he's a very talented player. But like the best thing of him is a very good character, you know, very good friend, and I think that he will be very, very successful because he's a hard worker.
Last question, going back to the club now, what are your thoughts, what are your expectations about this year? Obviously a big one.
Yeah, we need to reach some goals this year, like Final Four, you know. We made a very good team and we have very good players, and I think that this year that we can make the Final Four.
Good luck. Thanks.
Okay, Osman, unfortunately, was only able to see the one game of Osman, you just have to be impressed with the kid. I mean, he is still a kid, that's the thing. As much as he's done, he's still, as much as he's doing, he really is still just a kid, he's gonna be great for a long time. So it's cool to catch up with him a little bit. Sarge, you know, I cannot honestly remember if I talked too much about it. I know I wrote a piece on the website about him wanting to be more of a three. You know, he's those ball handling skills, the passing skills that he has are just so fun to watch. And you know, obviously it sounds like he wants to be the three, and you know, maybe, you know, like he says, maybe lose a little bit of weight, gain some more mobility. But the passing skills are not going to go away, and he's gonna, you know, he's still going to get bigger. He's still young as well, and you just have to wonder. You know, the physical body is going to continue to grow. He's going to just get, you know, just in general, with his age, he's going to get bigger. You know, just how much flexibility and mobility he has, and if he can do things, you know, he would have problems guarding threes in the NBA. But at the same time, if he continues to develop those low post skills, which he's learning now, that gives him some mismatch if he takes the guy in the block. Dario it was fun watching Dario for five games. And can't wait to see what he's doing this season. So I guess actually the one final thing I'd like to just kind of throw out there is that on Friday is the U18 All-Star Game, which obviously features the top guys from both the U18. The U18 European Championship A and B. Also, the CMVP will be around in the game. And some of the guys who are in the age group but didn't play there but played at U19s, like Nick Slavica. Their All-Star game is coming up on Friday. That, I think, is available also on Live Basketball TV, if I'm not mistaken. That's going to be a battle. It's going to be fun. I'll definitely be looking at that for next week. Probably I'll have a few interviews from there. So that'll be fun to see. Obviously, you're missing some names. You know, Bender's not coming. Mazzaline is not there. Ortseven pulled out late with a groin injury. Tile is not there. Korkmaz is not going to be there. Papianis supposedly pulled out injured, but he's not going to be there. So some of the big names are not going to be there, but there's still plenty of very highly talented players. It's definitely going to be a fun little game to watch, exhibition. And there's going to be some good matchups. I can't really reveal too much about the rosters. They're not totally set, but there's going to be a couple of fun little battles programmed into the roster selection. I'll give you that much. And so, yeah, going to be pretty nice. And so I guess with that, I will let you wait until next week. Enjoy the end of Eurobasket. I believe that the FIBA Asia, I guess I can take a look at that real quick. FIBA Asia is going to be starting up. So have that to look forward to as well. So enjoy that, and enjoy the U18 All-Star game. 6 days, so that starts on September 23rd. So a week from today, a week from Wednesday, it'll start up. So have a chance to watch some of that. Maybe before listening to next week's show. Granted that we talk in the afternoon or whatever. Enjoy the end of Eurobasket. Enjoy the 18 All-Star game, and then maybe the beginning of the FIBA Asia Championship. So until then, last thing I need to do is let you know what you're listening to in a second, and it will be Dinner in Paris. Figured a little bit of some French music, not quite, but at least Paris is in there. And it is by Daisy May. So enjoy that. That is available on freemusicarchive.org. So we will talk to you next time. Thank you.
They gave me a job in the city.
My name is Kamil Novak, I am the Secretary General of FIBA Europe, and you are listening to Taking the Charge.